Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Bald Move Commission podcast. This one was commissioned by one Brian Strader, and he's a very brave individual. He plucked three random episodes. Well, not random, actually. He spent a lot of time giving it thought, actually. He then wrote his primers and everything. Uh-huh. He carefully curated three episodes from the classic science fiction series, Babylon 5. Something I think we've talked about, because we're Star Trek fans. Neither of us have much of a background in Babylon 5. I know that we've talked about being kind of put off initially by the makeup and special effects, because we kind of audiovisual whores. We kind of had a semi-disastrous Lost podcast that made a lot of fans feel unsatisfied, and so we had a whole bunch of people running on television shows we have never watched, like Buffy and Babylon, and we wrote to these people and begged them not to commission these podcasts. They're going to be terrible, and they persevered on. Brian was one of those. He selected 207 Soulmates. This is season 2, of course. 207 Soulmates, 209 The Coming of Shadows, and 220 The Long Twilight Struggle. Babylon 5, 1993, science fiction, the B squad to Deep Space Nine. What'd you think, Jim?
But can I say, like, a notch above a show like Farscape or something?
Sure.
Or the Kevin was that the Kevin Sorbo joint?
Oh.
Was that the Hercules joint?
No, I know what you're talking about, though.
Which one was that?
I don't know.
This is a notch above that, for sure. Like, even
Zathura, the legendary space journeys, I think is what it was.
Even in the day, like, I kind of heard buzz about Babylon 5, and
right,
you know, it wasn't getting the buzz that Star Trek was getting. Certainly, I mean, this was concurrent with both TNG and DS9.
Yeah,
so
TNG was wiping up, was winding down. Space Nine is spinning up, and less than 6 months apart, Deep Space Nine and Babylon came out.
Yeah, it was a time to be a sci-fi TV junkie, for
yeah,
sure.
Except for I dipped my toe. I remember watching the miniseries and thinking, I don't know about this.
Hmm.
Or it was not the miniseries, it was the like TV movie that kicked it off. And then I remember being sometime later the series debuted, and I watched a couple episodes. I'm like, this dude looks like a fucking owl. This guy looks like an iguana. The sets look like it's the inside of a cargo container truck. I can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah,
and I bailed. You're pussyfooting around your opinion. I'll give mine. I was surprised at how engaged I was by all this.
Okay.
I don't know whether I just turned 40 today. My audiovisual whoredom has mellowed out, but I don't know that this thing's reputation. And again, maybe this is not. Maybe this is conventional wisdom, but amongst my friend group and my Trekkie-based fandom, Babylon is seen as the second banana to Deep Space Nine. I'm not sure that that's a fair comparison. I think that
I think it is.
I think Deep Space Nine might be the second banana to Babylon 5.
Absolutely not. You're totally wrong about that, but it's closer than I gave it credit for back in the day.
So how that's the thing. I make that statement filling in a lot of the missing pieces of Babylon with kind of my feeling of what Babylon or Deep Space Nine and all that stuff. Because here's the thing, Deep Space Nine took a good long while to round into shape and get interesting, which by interesting I mean the Dominion War.
Are you sure about that?
Did
because I watched it recently. By season 3, we've got the Defiant, we've got the Dominion, we've got
season
like,
3
attacks by the Cardassians. The same year as this.
Okay, I get that, but this is early in the second season. They're establishing the Shadow War threat, which I feel like was, it seemed like it got to the point of the big epic conflict sooner than Deep Space Nine. And as a consequence,
right,
I'm guessing it had less weird episodes. Like, is there an episode of Babylon where Commander Sheridan took the crew to play fucking space baseball with inside the planet machine against all the caretakers of the techno planet? Like,
so that's the thing. Like, Deep Space Nine is a longer show. It's what, 7 seasons, I think?
Versus five
of Babylon 5. And if you cut out probably 2 seasons worth of that kind of bullshit, then you're talking about a comparison, because there's so much to compare between these two shows.
Okay.
I mean, just from a straight up plot perspective.
So, did you research in the background? Because I guess the background is John, or I'm sorry, Michael Straczynski.
Yeah,
J. Michael Straczynski. Who, that's the other thing. I didn't know that he, I guess I somehow lost who was the showrunner. I'd have been much more excited because I, you know, I have a lot of fond memories. He worked on almost every cartoon show you can think, like He-Man, She-Ra.
Was I allowed to watch any of them?
Captain Power.
Okay.
He was like one, he also did Sense8 recently. He was the co-creator of that show.
Huh. Really? With the Wachowskis?
Mm-hmm. According to his IMDb.
Nice.
And kind of like arguably, because Jason Schenkel from the Nattercast got wind of us doing this, and he sent me an article he wrote a while back for the 20th anniversary of Babylon 5 on IO9, mm-hmm. talking about how like this was, you know, you could argue that this is kind of the dawn of the golden age of television, because it's the first time a showrunner actually said, I've got a 5-year plot that I want to execute, and... he was very involved in online fan bases. Like, this was like,
what about the original Star Trek?
But they didn't have a real back and forth with their fan community. They didn't have any kind of arc. Star Trek Next Generation had no kind of, it's just purely episodic.
In the title, in the intro screen, it's like, it's 5-year mission.
Sure, if we don't get canceled.
They clearly had a 5-year mission planned.
But they didn't have any kind of plot or character development.
There was no arc. It was all just, like you said, episodic.
Right. I mean, the evidence of that is the neck aliens that never went anywhere. I mean, that was set up to be the big bad for the series, and they couldn't even fucking execute that right.
Okay.
Like some shiny ball called the Borg bounced past, and they're like, oh, I gotta go in that direction. I don't know. It seems to me like this was... Alan Sepinwall seems to trace the Golden Age of Television back to, like, Lost and Oz. But I feel like maybe Babylon should get a little bit more of that credit, just... structurally the way they did. And also, I guess the genius of Straczynski and how he did this is that he knew that he couldn't guarantee, because television, like, you know, if you're writing a novel or movie, it's not like your character is going to fuck off in the middle of the production, okay? Mm-hmm. So he had this deal where every main character that had a plot line had to have what he called a trap door, which was a second character that was waiting in the winds. It was wings. It was either the junior attaché of a diplomat or a sub commander. Every character had a backup character that could step forward and take that person's place and not really impact the overall story. Mm-hmm. And I guess he had to do that quite a few times. He placed the commander in the first season.
Yeah.
Because
Talia? Is that her name?
Because I was like, oh, I like her because she was in one of, I think, season 3 of 24. I recognized her and I'm like, ooh, I like this actress. But he had to do that a couple times, but not as much as he thought. So then he had all this, like, rich, deep cast that, you know, they were meant to be trap doors, but they kind of became their own characters. And I thought that's kind of a pretty smart way to, like, bridge the gap between purely episodic and this... Or procedural to something that's episodic.
Yeah. Yeah, I forget exactly how they did that with, like, Dax in DS9. Because Dax, Jadzia, left. Didn't she?
Fortunately,
at some point?
Fortunately, she's just a symbiote. So you can have the same character and just pull the slug out
different
of her
body,
and shove it into the pixie Dax. And you keep on rolling.
And Worf's still banging her.
Yeah. not miss a beat. So do you...
Worf's still banging him? Him.
That's,
it's,
well,
a him.
I mean, what
it's
is
a him
it?
Or her at that point.
There's
I don't
been
know.
So many different lives, so many different sexes. It's, you know, are you banging the slug inside the person? Are you banging the skin suit they're wearing? Lots of questions. Philosophers disagree.
Sure.
Did you think that the special effects were a barrier to your enjoyment of these episodes?
You know, they were actually better than I remembered.
Same here.
I remember seeing them and going, oh my god, that's computer animation and it looks like trash. This time around, I didn't think so.
Yeah.
Now, it's not like the stunning models you get of the Enterprise flying through space and shooting at also modeled Cardassian ships or something. Like, that type of stuff looks a lot better, I think, because all they have to do is composite it. But
the weakness... the clear strength of this and the weakness of Star Trek was you got honest to God fleet battles, planetary bombardments, the kind of shit that you rarely got in Star Trek. Like if you saw more than 4 ships on a screen, it was like a fucking season finale in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Whereas these video toasters made on Amigas, apparently they could just crank, you know, hey, you need a war fleet of like 7 capital ships, 100 fighters, and what are they? Yeah, we can do that, no problem.
Did they really do much of that in these episodes?
I saw, yeah. Like,
but these are the blockbuster episodes of
Babylon
5 too, right?
Right.
So like when I compare this to the Dominion Wars,
yeah,
it's a fucking joke.
Well, because
the Dominion Wars, you'd have hundreds of ships on the screen. In this, I saw maybe 10 tops.
I guess I don't remember the Dominion War. And you've seen,
man.
The thing is, you've seen it more recently because I always remembered you would see, like, every once in a while you'd get a decent size
fleet. Yeah, like Wolf 359, you got
right.
It's an amazing battle.
But it was always
battle.
Few and far between, and I would say that you're just chalking up, you know, you saw this when you were 16 and you thought there was 100 ships, there's really
right.
13.
But I watched it last year.
Yeah, okay.
So it's pretty fresh in my mind, and I do think the ship battles, I think everything about Star Trek of the era was like a notch above this, both from the acting quality to the set design to just the coherence of the look of Star Trek, I think is better. But it's not that massive gulf that I remember. Babylon 5 actually holds its own surprisingly well.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree that the set design, the special effects are worse on Babylon, because I think overall they are. But I found somehow the diversity, like, you know, the main guys that are going to have to be in makeup all the time, they're not too extreme. I did feel sorry for the Jakar guy. Like,
oh, he's the Garrick.
Leonard Nimoy or Michael Dorn want a fucking bitch about a turtle being glued to their head or tips in their ears. This guy,
right.
He must have never gotten out of makeup. It's
yeah.
Like he got to sleep and then they put it on and like he spent 20 hours a day in this fucking rubber suit. He had to have.
Uh-huh.
With those uncomfortable ass red contacts, it must have been hell.
Oh, yeah.
It must have been hell to film this. But I couldn't believe how well the guy kind of emoted through all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like,
yeah.
There's something late in the third episode we covered where there's this, like, UN resolution. Well, not resolution. There's peace treaty being signed. It's a very one-sided deal, and it's these two proud guys.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that, like, even though this dude looked like a fucking owl and this guy looked like a cobra man, like, I was actually getting caught up in the moment.
Me too. I think, actually, the makeup effects are top-notch in this show.
And it reminds me of the way...
I don't think they lose a single step to Star Trek.
Right. And in fact, I thought, like, anytime you see, like, a Quark's bar scene, the diversity amongst aliens is way better in Babylon.
Yeah.
Like, in Star Trek, it's all just people with bits of feather glued to their hairs, or
yeah.
They got a ridge here, their eyebrows are shaved.
Other than the featured ones, like, you know, Quark or Morn or somebody.
Right.
But
it's like the Star Wars cantina every single time you're walking down the hallway. And I appreciated that. I don't know.
Yeah, that's I was super impressed by the makeup in the show. Not so much by the sets. I think the sets looked like cardboard and foam.
Right. No, and I thought, man, can I envision a day where humans dress in these kind of uniforms, because they're very, very gaudy, theatrical. The lizard people are all wearing the essentially Klingon leather uniforms, and you got the
lizard people. Who are the lizard
they're
people?
They're the Marn, I think.
Narn? I thought it was like Narnia. Maybe it's Marn.
I thought Londo was Mondo up until the very last episode.
Right.
So I could be butchering all this stuff, but I've only seen, you know, three episodes of Babylon 5 in the last 20 years, so
yep.
Cut me some slack.
Same here. I've actually only ever seen, like, full episodes.
Right.
I've only ever seen these three now.
And then, like, so I think the Minbari are the ones that have, like, the bony ridges on their skull, and the one woman
right.
that some, I guess she's...
She's a hybrid?
She's turned herself partial human as a way to... Because humans and Minbari were at war with each other until, like, 10 years
uh-huh.
ago. The Narn are the lizard guys. The Centauri are the owl people.
Uh-huh.
And then you had the Vorlon, which...
The owl people? Why do you call them owl people?
That's this big feathered crest.
I thought they were like Transylvanian...
Vampires?
Vampire people.
Well,
I don't understand what...
Londo himself
where
had...
Where the inspiration is.
I thought maybe the actor's teeth are just fucked up, but he's wearing a prosthetic that gives him fangs.
Yeah.
None of the others were, though, were they?
No. Well, some of them don't have accents. Like,
is his right-hand man,
Abel, like,
played by Bobby Monahan from Saturday Night Live? Sure.
Is that
no,
actually
it's not,
true?
But okay. I think Bobby Monahan, he needs to lobby every week on Saturday Night Live to do a Babylon 5
yeah.
skit.
Yeah.
Like, only one out of 100,000 people watching would get it.
Right.
But him being, I think, is Veer is his name?
I don't know his name.
But he's fucking Bobby Monahan.
Yeah, he really is. But that guy doesn't have an accent. Is he like Is he like the Worf of this scenario where he's like half human, half Centauri?
That's the thing. Like, I kept on digging at the, because I'm a lore whore, and I kept on like Vorlons, and they're wearing his badass suit, and it's called the Encounter suit, and but there's people speculating what they really looked like, so I had to tear into that, and like, oh, well, this is super interesting, and the planet computer, I had to know more about that. Like, there's all this fascinating stuff that's just around the edges that makes the universe feel really lived in. But yeah, I didn't have like, why are the Centauris like human, but then some of them have fangs, because they, it seems like they're just humans with fancy hair.
Yeah,
and the women all shaved their head. That's the other thing I found, that like Soulmate, the episode, the first one we watched, was more comedy. It's about the main guy having to choose between his three wives, and he hates them all, and
pretty broad comedy. Like, I didn't really like the first episode.
Very broad patriarchal comedy.
Yeah,
in this kind of way that you know, like Loxana Troy shows up on Enterprise, and she's just a massive man hungry bitch that Picard, like a child, hides from, and that's the way it went, man.
Yeah, I do see a ton of parallels with Star Trek.
Starfleet, the 23rd century, still makes the women wear miniskirts. What are you going to do?
Right.
It's not as enlightened as one would
think. To be fair,
think.
The men wear the miniskirts as well. So
do they?
Sometimes, yeah. You remember the original Star Trek, where the men would be walking down the halls wearing skirts?
That was their dress uniform.
Right.
It was literally a dress.
Tell me how that matters. Like,
okay. They weren't showing their legs. They were essentially wearing a dress over their regular uniform.
I think there was a lot of skin on this male uniform.
Fucking Kirk was not wearing go-go boots. Get the hell out of here.
Kirk didn't, but I saw some red shirts. Red skirts, in that case.
I thought surely in a new Star Trek movie that they would put a man in one of those fucking skirts just to prove the point, but nope, they have not.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of stuff like kind of around the edges. You touched on like the planet computer and the human Mambari relationship that I didn't really dig into because I didn't feel it was necessary for these episodes.
But it's crazy because the Mambari were kicking ass, and just as they were about to defeat us and strike Earth, they surrendered.
Why?
I don't know. And it even says in the synopsis we were given, it says mysteriously surrendered. I don't know whether it's got to be a plot point later on.
Right, I wonder, like, does the lore explain it, or is that something that's left mysterious for everyone?
Does Vorlon, like, you know, Beetle guys, the one that says, I see only flame or whatever, those guys are apparently like a billion old race. They're like super old, and they're caretaking these younger races, and there's like maybe some manipulation. I think that might be what the Shadow War is all about, which is very Star Control, you know.
Speaking of manipulation, there's the Psi-Corps.
Psi-Corps seemed very fascinating.
Seemed interesting.
I thought this best part of the first
Firefly-esque sort of thing.
The first one, because I remember when we were talking about Jessica Jones, we both, I think, agreed that the best part of that show was the concept of the villain, Kilgrave.
Right, yeah.
They had Kilgrave in this episode, and I don't think maybe he comes back later, but the potential of that character, they even scratched the surface.
Well, he was in it earlier, too. I guess he was like, They showed the part of their relationship that they kind of talk about.
Do they?
With Talia coming to the station and whatnot.
Right.
I guess they got a little bit deeper into that earlier on.
Right.
In the show.
I imagine the Psi-Corps stuff, that seems super interesting, and it's a little bit of like Warhammer 40K. Like, it's awesome, but the whole thing is kind of horrific because it feels like it's very genetically engineered and not a lot of free will. And
That's why I make the comparison to Firefly, which, you know, this came out way before Firefly.
Right. But I thought that like, they were going to do some really interesting things about, you know, with this what they call the empath. But they didn't.
They probably
didn't
really. Do later Maybe on. They do. You know, I mean, Star Trek has the time police.
Right.
That it kind of touches on every so often. But yeah, I don't know. Soulmates was probably my least favorite episode of these three.
But even then, like I guess the cool thing about shows like Star Trek is when you had they always had like an ABC plot. And even if the A plot wasn't so hot, there was usually something cool going on in a B or a C plot. And like, none of these episodes, actually the only one I have a real problem with is the first one.
Yeah.
And even then the B plot of the all the other stuff that was going on, I thought was pretty cool. Like the stuff that they're developing with this relationship with Jakar, and I don't know, the interesting things about the
Jakar's just Garak. I mean, he's got the same letters in his name, right?
Right.
From DS9.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's so, like, the fact that you've got this gruff security chief who's relying on his gut, and he doesn't shapeshift, but...
Right, but he's essentially Odo.
He's Odo.
And Jakar is Garak, and he's got a contentious relationship.
And the fucking commander that lost his wife in a war, I think, and he's a war vet. Like, he's Sisko. Like,
Right.
And they're right outside of Stargate. I mean, like, right. This is fucking... It seems like Straczynski... Is that how you say his name, Straczynski?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It seems like he essentially said Paramount ripped him off because he pitched this to them and they said no thanks. And then
he did pitch this to them.
Yes.
Oh,
and then
shit.
They come back as they're filming announced Deep Space Nine, and it comes out within months of Babylon.
Oh man!
But he's like, it's kind of like, yeah, they did it, but. What am I going to do? Am I going to go fucking suing Star Trek?
I can just imagine. Like, if it were me, I would be sitting there watching week by week Deep Space Nine, and I'd be like, you motherfuckers. Like, every single week you have the same characters.
Right. The same settings. There's casinos and bars and whorehouses.
Right. The same setting,
shady
the same
smugglers
plots.
Are coming in and out. There's like multiple shady smugglers in this
it would drive me
series.
Insane.
Yeah.
Knowing that it was by far the more popular show, too.
Yeah.
Like, just given the name, Star Trek.
Sure.
It has a massive advantage.
In this first episode, I kind of did like the stoner character. The guy who's the actual active psyker, because he just doesn't... I mean, I guess that's once I figured out that he was essentially a Kilgrave type, it made sense. But he just has got the biggest pair of balls.
Why wouldn't he?
He's given this, Odo blowing him a bunch of shit. He just doesn't care about anything.
I don't know the security guy's name either.
He's
hardly in
the other episodes.
It's
something aggressively Polish sounding. It's got an improv. I think Straczynski just anagrammed his name and then he named the guy that.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know anything about him. And he's a minor character in these three episodes.
Right. But on the other hand, it was weird that he could be taken down by a surprise punch.
Oh, okay.
And also, so this is a new type of psychic, right? That they've never seen before.
And they have a name for it?
Well...
Did you have a problem with that?
No. Well, I mean, I don't.
It turned you into something entirely new. An empath.
Right, right.
What? Did you come up with that on the spot?
Well, you could... So, I guess, like, you could describe a new phenomenon. Like, if a disease made a person start drinking blood, we'd probably say you've become a... That doesn't mean we've had experience with vampires. It's just we're making... Empath doesn't describe what this guy really does, but, you know, whatever. Every science fiction show's got its own weird language.
Yeah, but I mean, you know,
but,
having seen 7 years of Star Trek.
But Commander Sharad confidently states that we've got four men outside watching on viewport, and if we ever chummy-chummy with you, they're going to come in and start blasting. Well, what if this shit works through...
Right.
Like, the television,
you're
or what if he's got the
new.
Range of, like, a light year that he can affect people? Like, you're making a lot of fucking assumptions with the guy who's got a lot of power here.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I gotta say, this episode also didn't give the greatest first impression for this show, with me having not seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It opens on a shot of that guy with his fucking hair, of Londo, with his goddamn ridiculous hair. And I immediately rolled my eyes and went, what am I in for here?
I know.
This is going to be a fucking train wreck.
I forgot that they're hitting me with the owl people right off the bat.
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
And this shrill wife of his, like this first wife, I don't know her name. I think it's Timov. I don't know the other's
names. I
don't
give a shit. It's the one that is
vomit backwards.
The biggest bitch, but she actually saves his life for some reason.
Right.
Because she secretly loves him.
I guess. Doesn't want anyone to know that. But yeah, not a great first impression on this episode.
Mm-hmm.
It had a big hill to climb, and it eventually did.
And yeah, there's other cringy things about, like, this alien woman who's now knows what it's like to have female hair, and mm-hmm. she's, I am bleeding from this ventral hole. What is,
right, these, like, cramps, what are they? Oh,
like,
God.
There's a room full of sweaty nerds in this writer's room, and they're writing the broadest of female comedy, and it's not great.
It was not hitting for me at all.
What'd you think about the lizard man investigator extraordinaire Jakar?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a ladies man. He had some key somehow figured out that the more conventionally attractive of the wives
right.
had arranged for this attempted assassination, and he kind of like gives her the old bedroom eyes at the end. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on the whole concept of interspecies sex? And I wonder if they explore it here
where
in Babylon 5.
Where do I stand, like, ethically, or where do I stand?
Would you fuck a good-looking cobra woman?
I think the better question is, could I fuck a good-looking cobra woman?
Let's just assume there's some kind of cloaca that could facilitate a bonding. Would you do it? Or would that just be like, nope, I can't get over the scaly face?
I mean, they would have to be...
What if it's what humans
would consider attractive, right? Like, I'm not going to fuck a moose.
Because
it's not attractive to me.
What I'm saying, like, if you had a snake woman with a super hot conventional terrestrial body, yes, it's covered in scales, but it's got curves in the right places.
Okay, we're talking like a Mystique sort of thing.
Okay, yeah.
Would
let's
I
go
fuck
with that.
Mystique? Yeah, I'd fuck Mystique.
Would
Why
you fuck
not?
This? Would you fuck. So Mystique has got even. She's too conventional. Like, this is full on bald headed. Red eyes, pointy teeth, maybe there's a tongue, I don't know. Do you fuck a sexy
red
spider
eyes,
looking
pointy
alien?
Teeth and a tongue.
Like it's a conventionally attractive, it's like Scarlett Johansson with a spider head on it. Do you do that?
With a spider head, like all spider heads?
All spider head.
No.
Would you fuck Scarlett Johansson type that had like the vagina looked like a spider head?
No, God no.
Okay. I'm starting to
That's
a crab woman.
Frightening.
How about crab woman?
Crab woman, like
got
a
guard
Futurama
plates. There's some kind of guard plates down there.
Zoidberg
that snap
sort
open.
Of thing.
Yeah, there you go. It's got claws, but again, curvaceous. It's in your body. You like the you're into the body type.
If I was just into curves, I'd fuck a beach ball. I mean, that's not doing it for me, man.
I don't. Maybe I'm. I mean, I wouldn't. I obviously, I just think it's funny. I wonder if Babylon 5 got into this because, like, one of my enduring memories of Ringworld, Larry Niven's, as I wasn't prepared for this as a 13 and 14 year old reading it, is like he goes like really in depth about what interspecies sex is like.
Okay.
And how it's used in like commerce and trade and to seal contracts. And it's like every fucking excuse to have a human, an alien fucking, he goes for it.
Hmm.
I don't know. Maybe I'm warped, but that's what I was thinking this whole time. I'm like, I see Jakar give her the bedroom eyes. I'm like, does she fuck the Cobra Man? Does the Cobra Man fuck her? Because presumably he's attracted to Cobra women. So why is this Shane Dow woman doing for him?
Yeah.
Is he attracted to her personality, her power? Like, I don't know.
It's because she doesn't have a spider head.
Well,
spider magoo.
That's the you put the spider head.
Yeah, it's too much.
It's not it's just right in your face, man.
There's another I guess it was contentious at the time, sexual relationship in this episode.
Was there?
That isn't really touched on later because I don't think Talia's in the other two episodes very much.
Yeah.
But yeah, Talia and I guess Ivanova, is that her name? The Minbari.
Yeah.
Like, she's going to her quarters to bang, I guess.
Really?
Or they had a relationship, certainly, that was not, like, as fully developed as they wanted to make it because the actress, Andrea Thompson, left the show.
Hmm.
Because she wanted a more recurring character, so she quit her job.
Interesting.
Which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but...
Well, she left for JAG, right?
JAG,
the Air Force thing. CBS, like it's a network show. This is, I mean, I think that's, I would probably do it.
JAG may not be a branch of the Air Force or I don't know.
It's the naval lawyers is what it is. Or
naval lawyers?
Maybe it's just armed forces lawyers, JAG.
All right.
Because I think it means Judge Advocate General.
Hmm.
Anyway.
Okay.
She left for a higher paying, higher profile gig.
Okay. That's
can't blame
fine.
It. She had a trap door, stepped right in.
Right, but I guess they dropped that thread, the relationship, as they should, because it's a different fucking person.
Right.
Worf. but yeah, I guess they were going to go somewhere with that.
Well, the other thing that I didn't know this, but you know the main Minbari woman, the one that had the crest bone, but she's recently grown out hair.
Right.
Michael Straczynski intended her to be a masculine character that he was going to transition to female in the second season. Like they went to a chrysalis and oh shit, now it's this man's a woman.
Yeah.
And explore that kind of like transgender aspect in 1992 or 93. Like, yeah. And the only reason they didn't is because they tried pushing her voice through the vocoder, like, 12 different ways, and they couldn't get it to sound like the way they wanted it to. So they scrapped the whole plot and just made her like androgynous, and then she's unambiguously female, I guess, in the second season. But that kind of sucked. Like I thought that was amazing. Like, so you're saying they had a lesbian relationship and he tried to have a trans woman and it didn't work because the technology wasn't there. That's pretty incredible.
Well,
for 93
was there. I mean, DS9 essentially did it. They wrestled with a lot of those issues, right?
With what?
With, like, transgendered sort of ideas.
With what? The Dax symbiote?
Yeah, with Dax.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, it was a more complicated version of that, because now you've got a different form with a different consciousness and melded consciousnesses.
Completely different body,
and like,
yeah. Right.
Right. So what the fuck is that even? Like, there is no human analog for that.
I never found the symbiote, I never found that Trill shit fully fleshed out. Like, to me,
yeah,
like, there's no universe, and that's not just a horror. Like, to me, the symbiotes have taken over and fucked up this race's relations, and they worship them like beings. It's great honor to be subsumed by this fucking alien parasite. Like, that's some straight up bullshit.
Fully? I don't know.
I know, man. I'm just saying that, like, I've watched the same shows you have, and I've always thought, like, they didn't really do that. Trill's a lot darker than they're letting on.
Okay. Fair.
You know,
and then Ben Sisko just has this relationship with it where it's like his old buddy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We used to fucking kick Klingons in the nuts and now you're fucking one.
Right.
What would Kierzon say?
how about the
is he still in there? Should I stop asking uncomfortable questions about your psychological makeup?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little weird.
OK.
What about the intro? Like the credit sequence for this show.
Ah, they'll go to Gilligan Island method.
They
where
do
it's essentially they tell the story.
The Full House sort of method too.
Yeah.
At the end where they say, this is this actor and it's playing this character.
Sure.
And
yeah.
It's a little less classy, I thought, than like a Star Trek intro. Because Star Trek isn't showing you the actors giving you the thumbs up and the wink at the camera.
No, that's true. But on the thing,
it feels very Full
I
House.
Also think that Star Trek has a lot of baked in advantages for brand, and like you kind of know what you get.
Right.
Whereas Babylon 5 had to, I mean, just like Firefly, same way. Firefly did the same, like,
uh-huh.
And it even had the fucking voiceover where they told you the story so far, and then, yeah, I don't
sometimes
know.
Sometimes it did, sometimes it didn't.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Last time I watched on Netflix, I feel like every episode had a Nathan Fillion voiceover talking about the Earth that was.
A good chunk of them did, yeah.
And now we're doing this, and Serenity Valley that, and
right. But those weren't on, I guess, the TV-aired versions. They
weren't
put
they?
Back in on the DVDs.
I don't know.
Yeah, this thing, it's got kind of your standard like Star Trek-style intro for a
the
good chunk
actually
of it, and then
I know
it goes.
You haven't seen it, but it's straight up Captain Power is what it is. Like,
is
it's almost like down to the font and the comp. Yeah, it's very the old school children's toy vehicle marketing Captain Power deal.
Okay.
What else do we want to talk about on the first episode? Then we can get to the second one, which you can almost the next two episodes. You can almost consider as a unit the Coming of Shadows and the Long Twilight Struggle. Brian mentioned that it's like Coming of Shadows kicked off this war in 220. The 2 minute cold open essentially explained everything that happened. That the Centauris were kicking Narn ass, and Narn is on its knees, and there's going to be this desperate counterattack that gets, you know. But what do we want have to say about those episodes?
Oh, those are much better episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think. The guy playing Jakar is really good. He maybe pushes things a little too far emotionally sometimes.
Apparently that was the guy...
Overacts just a tiny bit, but...
I guess that was Straczynski's goal, that he wanted him to be the... In the audience's mind heading into the meat of this season, he wanted you to see him as, like, the stereotypical scene-chewing villain. So then he could pivot him into a more interesting... And same with Londo. Londo is this,
man,
like,
that's
buffoon.
A risky play.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But, I, you know, Deep Space Nine kind of did the same thing with Garak and Gul Dukat and all that shit.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's yet another parallel with Star Trek. I think, you know, aside from just, like, maybe taking it a little too over the top, I would have liked to see maybe a more nuanced version of him, but...
Yeah.
I think we do in the second episode of this mini arc here.
Oh, I thought so. Like I said, by the end, I couldn't believe I was being moved by the owl person and the lizard man. Like, right. It was really, I was kind of jaw agape.
So let's talk about owl person for a second.
Londo.
He is clearly reluctant to do the things he's doing. Why is he doing them? Because that's the one piece of this puzzle I feel like I didn't get in this episode.
I think...
Like, what are his motivations?
So it seems like in my research that these Centauri were like this big... They were intended to be like the Roman Empire in decline. That
right.
They had a whole bunch of space. They've been suffered a lot of setbacks. You never really got the sense of...
But personally,
of,
like, I don't care. Like, I understand the race
so
relations.
That he wanted... He was this ambitious person that saw himself sitting on the throne and becoming the emperor.
Uh-huh.
But then along the way, the things he had to do to get to that started to be unappetizing. And I think if you read between the lines, you're supposed to understand that his relationship with Jakar and his being participating in the Babylon Project, which is this UN organization, had started to change and think that there might be a better way.
Yeah.
But he's still locked into, you know, this group of circles and political sphere that he didn't feel like he could walk away from easily.
I guess the piece I was missing there is that personally he's very motivated to try to rise as high in the power structure as he can.
Right.
I guess these two episodes don't lay that part of his character out.
He had him talking to Veer about, well, isn't this what you always wanted? And this was after the dream. He's like, I'm not even sure. What did you think of the dream sequence, by the way?
Dream sequence was fine.
I thought it was pretty. I wasn't sure about the sun, the giant flabby hand reaching out of the sun.
Oh, I forgot about that part. I was just thinking about the part where Jakar is choking him.
Okay, so was that Jakar?
I think that was Jakar, and decrepit,
with missing an eye or something. Because the fact, you know, I don't want to sound controversial, but I found very much that all the cobra headed dudes looked the same.
Yeah, they look very similar.
So, like, if I got 5 seconds of you, I'm like, you look like a lizard man.
Right.
You know, I'm not familiar enough with your morphology to distinguish you as individuals.
Yeah, definitely. It makes me think that by the end of this series, either that's going to happen or that's going to be the driving force for him to avoid.
Right.
Londo to avoid.
And I think it's interesting because I feel like that we're supposed to see initially the Narn as these like violent asshole villains.
Right.
And the Centauri are kind of like the high-minded,
same
noble,
with the Bajorns,
flashy.
Right? Like,
yeah,
you kind of see the Bajorans as just as violent as the Cardassians in DS9.
Well, I think that I was already starting to feel like the Narn are getting, like, they have, I was feeling more sympathetic to them than the Centauri just in the 3 episodes I watched.
Yeah. No, me too.
Because I didn't, you know, I...
Because this is a repeating pattern for them, right? The Centauri have dominated them once before, and they've broken free.
150 years ago.
Much like the Bajorans.
Right.
And now it's all happening over and over again.
Yeah. There's also some religious overtones to all this, like...
Is there? Because I thought that was the main difference between DS9 and this is...
Well, they all
DS9
talk about
touched
the religion,
a lot more religion.
And I felt like that the Ranger... stuff with the war, like Warriors of Light versus
I
thought that there was there was going to be some kind of
like the
religious
resistance.
Allegory there. It was going to be some kind of almost a secret sect or some kind of mystic thing,
maybe. Yeah, it's possible, but I didn't really get much of that.
Gotcha. I thought there was a lot of cool science fiction ideas in here too, like the fact that the emperor of the Centauri always had around 2 permanently linked psychics, so that the homeworld always knew what he was doing and he always knew what was going back on. Like, I thought that was a really cool idea.
Yeah.
They talk about like a lot of like some of the technobabble I thought sounded more interesting on this show. Like, they talk about like they're writing this great speech that takes full advantage of psycholinguistics, like, and 200 years they've perfected different, you know, ways of demagoguery so they can actually almost telepathically influence people's thoughts with speeches. I thought that was a really cool concept.
How did you feel? So I want to talk about the emperor as he is in this first episode a little bit, but how did you feel about the idea that all of this setup with Jakar wanting to kill this guy and with the speech and all this stuff never came to fruition? It was just completely for nothing when this guy...
Interesting, because there's a lot of clear parallels between, like, the Palestinian-Israeli situation, and maybe even with the emperor coming to apologize that there was even some Japanese-Chinese relationships mixed into here.
Okay.
And that Jakar was essentially going to do some kind of, like, suicide bomb thing.
Right. Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting, his speech, like, you know, I'm living in a situation where there's only three possibilities. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, we both die.
I die or he dies.
And, yeah, and it's like, the other ones, I either fail or I lose. Mm-hmm. But there was a fourth possibility that he couldn't even in this, like, moment of singular action.
Right.
The emperor collapses due to an illness before he can kill him. I don't know. I thought that was, like, I feel like that they're really making this... Jakar and Londo into these big, like, tragic characters.
And you know, him collapsing before he can get there and deliver his speech actually, I think, adds to the relationships between Jakar and Londo a lot, and also just the race relations there.
Yeah, and the fact that, like,
I don't think it was actually for nothing. I mean, it did totally subvert your expectations, and it was just like, well, that seemed pointless on the face of it, but I think it goes a lot deeper than that.
Yeah, and also the fact that you've got, like, a rogue element of the government that's hardliner, that's taking over this more kinder, gentler approach. I thought, like, a lot of this stuff is surprisingly relevant, which must mean it was relevant back then, too.
Right.
Which means, you know, nothing really ever changes the way we do things on this fucking planet.
Certainly. And I mean, it comes down to the basic idea of what it is to be human, like your choices that you make and how they affect people. And in times that you don't think you have a choice, you actually do.
I think, like, what would happen, like, if they hadn't attacked the Narn? Like, it seems like they were headed for this unprecedented era of peace and prosperity, and it was tragic when you saw Jakar go and shake Londo's hand and, like, thank him, like, really emotionally about how... And, you know, thank God lizard people cry, or I'd have a hard time deciphering what this guy's thinking. But he's, like, genuinely moved by this guy's wanting to apologize for his actions, and, you know, Londo's sitting there, and he's aware of how awkward it is that, you know, they're at war and this guy doesn't even know it.
Right.
And he kind of feels guilty about it. Like, I'm always impressed by how, like, a Leonard Nimoy can take this emotionless character and get a lot of emotion out of it. And how these...
Without betraying the character. The
same thing with Brent Spiner with his, like, or, like, Worf, you know, like, Michael Dorn is emoting through this turtle shell. He's got glued on his forehead. And these guys, especially, I thought the guy playing Jakar was just doing an amazing job of kind of making this all feel sincere, even though as I look at him, I'm like, you look like a lizard man in a bad Renaissance fair costume. And you look like...
And you look like Count a French general glued a Roman hat on sideways. Like,
I can't tell if you're going to swoop down and eat a field mice or try to sell me Chocula cereal. I don't know what is going on here. But the scene is pretty incredible.
No, it's amazing to me because, like, that was my view of it back in the 90s when it first came out. I took one look at this, what I viewed as a train wreck of a show, solely on the appearance of it.
It's such a it's a very shallow...
It totally is, and that's what I was in for at the time.
Yeah.
Now that I was, you know, paid to give it a chance, that's what Straczynski needed to do. He needed to go hand out money to people and say, down and watch this fucking show I made.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a lot deeper than I gave it credit for. It has really interesting plot lines. I think this whole idea of the emperor here having a change of heart at the end of his life and saying,
he doesn't give a shit about appearance anymore. He's like, just, you know, his hair's all falling out, and that's a big deal.
And it's
a big deal in Centauri culture.
Oh, yeah. And I guess he has a wig that he could wear that would emulate that, and he doesn't
allow
care
him to
anymore.
Fly. It gives him the power of flight too. That was the really sweet part.
Only on windy days, though. but the idea that, you know, he's lived a life that he now kind of regrets, and he's going to seize one last opportunity to try and make some kind of amends, and he knows it's not going to change everything. It's not going to be a redemption of his entire life and all the choices he made till now, but at some point you have to make a choice to change.
Right.
And he's done that, and I think that's an interesting aspect of people, you know?
It's, sure. And they're also able to mine humor, because I put in the notes because I didn't know the guy's name at this point. And Mike says Snake Guy is the funniest one. As he was kvetching about, like, I can't believe this
guy. Is it Lizard Guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I called him Snake Guy.
Okay.
And I think a couple paragraphs down, I start calling him Jakar. So
Iguana Man,
Snake Guy, you know, a spider face. But he's like talking about, like, this guy's got the worst case of the timing. Why couldn't they just prop him up for 2 more minutes and then I could kill him?
Right.
Like that. I thought that was really funny.
Whereas he also has the worst case of timing because the guy's coming to apologize.
Right.
And he wants to kill him.
That,
so like
that added to the irony of the situation.
Right.
On the other hand, there are a lot of crazy things in these episodes, like the fact that he's at this official banquet and he's got a knife in his gauntlet
and he's actively pulling it out.
And he's like, hey, ooh, and he's just right. Like, if lizard guys could sweat, he'd just be sweat coming down in sheets over his face. And like right. The stoner guy. In the first one, when he's doing his psychic trick on the customs officer, and like it's a blatant like. You know, you don't need to see these droids kind of situation uh-huh. that the security chief sees. And then as he's walking away, he gives his biggest mugging smirk. Like I pulled one over on him I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This isn't how a person with this kind of psychic powers, like if it was day one or day three, but day 1000, this is a part of your life. You fuck with the guy's brain and move on. You don't congratulate yourself on
right.
fucking with them every single time. Like, but it's like there's all this mugging for the camera, so the stupidest person watching the show realizes there's something significant here.
That's what gives him his power. It's his smugness. If he ever lost his smug right. personality, he would lose his abilities.
He has to keep generating smug or he loses everything.
Yep.
And you can never get it back.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I again, super cool. I thought the spider ships were creepy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they're about. Like, obviously, I think this is the
big alliance Londo has made personally.
This is some big. Oh, really?
This is the Dominion, right? Because like the other like full. The accidents on these people also drive me up the goddamn wall because they're not consistent. They're not good. They're not. They're just bad, straight up bad. And this other guy, who's I guess rises to the stature of like Emperor's second hand right. or right hand man,
yeah.
By the second episode here, yeah. He has the worst accent of them all.
Okay,
but he at some point says like, "Oh, we're gonna do this thing," and Londo's like, "Oh, well, let me go, like, make this attack happen. I've got my alliances."
So he's like, made contact with the shadow
guys. It would take so many ships to do that.
We did. Okay.
Right.
I thought it was.
It's not a racial alliance. It's like a Londo alliance at that point.
Okay. Because what was confusing to me is why these spider ships always seem to show up, and like the Narn didn't know who they were. I assumed the Centauri. I thought it was like a fortunate coincidence that kept favoring the Centauri. Like, when they showed up later on to hit the supply line, they uh-huh. showed up to hit it, and these spiders came to defend them, and I thought what was going to happen is the Centauri were going to warp in, because Londo's guys, those were Londo's guys, it's so obvious now, I feel like an idiot.
They were.
But I thought what was going to happen is the Centauri were going to warp, and they're both going to realize, oh shit, these spider guys, we have a mutual enemy, and it never came to pass. I'm like, uh-huh. okay, so Londo somehow made that alliance.
Which were... It happened before season 209.
And this Ranger Alliance is an opposition to the Shadows, it seems like.
I guess so.
Since they're talking about being a wall of light or weapons right. of light or path of the light. I don't know what it was.
He essentially gives the first contact speech.
Uh-huh.
The line must be drawn here.
He does.
This far.
He does.
You broke your little ships.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing. It's like I kept on thinking around this time when I started buying into the owl people. Why are we turned off by things that are just like, why is it that when we see something we consider fucking stupid, we kind of assume like a universality of that opinion, when really if someone's not hurting anyone but themselves or like themselves, or they're not hurting anybody or bothering anybody, like why can't they do something like fucking crazy, like have an owl head, you know, a feather headdress on all the time? Like, why do I think that's fucking stupid? Why is that any more legitimate than fucking cargo shorts?
Right.
Like a Centauri might be like, you're wearing flip flops and cargo shorts. What the fuck, dude?
Right.
You know, it's like, I get it. Like, he looks like Count Chocula and he's got, you know, a wave on his head.
Well, I think this comes back to the whole idea. The whole reason I didn't like Babylon 5 is because it wasn't familiar to me.
Mm.
And I think things that are familiar to you, things you've grown accustomed to, automatically make sense. Whereas things that are different or outside your experience are automatically there. There's more resistance to them. And that rings true with Deep Space Nine versus Babylon 5 for me.
Because I think that actually is a bit of a strength on Babylon 5's part, because everything is so different and alien feeling. It's like it feels like a much more genuine alienness than stuff in Star Trek. Now, again, I've only seen 3 episodes. I confidently state that I don't think there's a baseball episode, but maybe there is. Like, it's hard to believe in 20 episodes of 5 seasons of syndicated television, they don't have a couple of off, goofy ass episodes.
Well, there was Soulmates, which I think is one of those. I mean, it's not quite as goofy as Run Along Home or Move Along Home, whatever it's called. But it's still goofy.
It is goofy. The main plot was goofy.
And it doesn't
goofy.
Have anything to really do. I mean, aside from the PsyCorp stuff.
Yeah.
That stuff doesn't really tie in, as far as I can tell, to the main
I thought it was like Londo's rise to power, too. And like his, like, that's the other thing is that I thought was interesting about Michael Straczynski's Bible is that he wanted to, like, spend the entire first season not even moving the plot along, but establishing concepts and races and characters and motivations so that, you know, by the end of season 2, you were fully invested in these owl people and lizard men, and that you were going to, like, the things that they were doing are going to feel very natural, organic, and kind of tragic because of that. And he always tried to balance, like, the inevitable tragedy of the weight of these things are happening with, like, this concept of hope, which seems like that's, like, what the Ranger concept is supposed to be. Like, even though the galaxy looks like it's going to shit, there is some kind of plan of good that's moving underneath everything. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think he pulled that off pretty well. I don't know. It's tough to get kind of under the skin of Londo and a lot of these characters where the persona of them is so ridiculous.
Yeah.
When you do that, when you can get past that, and I started to kind of toward the end of the third episode that we watched, I think there's obviously a lot of emotion there. And I mean, that's the other thing. Like, people who really want to see these completely alien things in their shows, well, guess what? If you go completely alien, you're not going to be able to identify that at all.
Right.
I mean, you won't have human things like love and desire in the same way we understand it, or defeat in the same way we understand it. Like, do you want a mindless, like, race, whatever it is, 35182 from Voyager? Like, is that what you're looking for? Because you can do that, but it's not.
I think it was Species 90210, actually.
It was. Yeah, played by Luke Perry. He never got a line, but he was there in the back saying, no, make that greener.
He did all the mocap on them.
He did. Just slithering and oozing around.
And that's like, would you be in the mood for like a hard sci-fi? Because this is something that I've been thinking about a lot since I read this paper about artificial intelligence. This guy, I've talked about it on a few other podcasts, but his point was that we assume that like an artificial intelligence, especially a hyper-intelligent artificial intelligence, will roughly think and reason the way we do, even though a lot of our thinking and reasoning has a lot of emotional assumptions about, you know, the way we feel about actions that don't have any like universal intrinsic goodness or badness to it. And like, why would we assume that, you know, I think it'd be interesting to have a hardcore science fiction series about a roughly human level intelligence, but is completely alien, like the spider people. Like, what would a spider, if you evolved from an animal that built webs and sucked, you know, like violently preyed on things and entombed them and paralyzed them and ate them alive. Mm-hmm. Like, what kind of sentiment would you have? Like, what, like,
you know, I think DS9 did touch on that with Odo's race, whatever they were, the founders. Yeah.
But they still, they seem like they were like almost a traumatized race.
Right.
And they, it's very much like the, you know, the Urquan from Star Control. Like they had a very strong idea of how, like, we've experienced this trauma and we want to make sure this never happens to us again. Thus, this is our kind of doctrine. Mm-hmm. And I still felt like that's, I could understand those motivations as a human.
Right. Because it's ultimately a human writing it and trying to appeal to other humans.
But then if I finally do get this hardcore science fiction spider beings, will I say I can't relate to anything that's happening?
Almost certainly.
But like, I kind of want to, what I want to experience is like when you're reading the best of like Lovecraft, like you can just barely get a fingernail on the motivations of what's going on.
Right,
but
right.
It's still like it's like, I don't know, two matching sides of Velcro. They start to hook together, but you can't quite. Like, I don't know how you write that, but
yeah,
I would pay a lot of money to see something like that.
Yeah, I mean, even in
a truly alien
like,
intelligence.
Even in movies like Alien.
Sure.
It's not quite truly alien, right? I mean, those things have a motivation. They want to get you the fuck off their planet, or they want to kill you.
And also, they're weird because they were a genetically engineered weapon, essentially. So, like, just when you try to get your hooks into what their culture's like, it's like, oh, well, they're a weapon. So it's almost like, I don't know why. I mean, I don't know why that's intrinsically less interesting or why that turns off my, why I don't need to figure it out. They're just monsters kind of thing. I don't know. Hyperintelligent spider, space spiders might just be seen as monstrous.
Maybe. I guess, you know, if I want to make a final compare, hopefully final comparison between like DS9 and Babylon 5, I think, you know, despite a few, more than a few filler episodes that DS9 had, I think it's a show that touches on a broader range of topics and has a broader range of ideas that it tries to incorporate.
Right.
Be it religion, which maybe this could definitely be, I'm just missing it because I haven't seen all of Babylon 5.
Right.
But from what little I've seen of Babylon 5, DS9 tries to go into religion and like truly alien beings. It has all of the same kind of, you know, Dominion War stuff, like these racial conflicts that Babylon 5 has, except I think it does it maybe, I don't know.
It's hard to
slightly
say.
Better. I've only seen two episodes of it. I know. It's,
and what I mean is they need Brent Spiner in the show.
Right.
No, I mean, like, there's, I haven't seen enough to judge. I guess.
Right.
It's so
weird.
But
it is more familiar to me, and so it feels better. Even going into it, like, not knowing anything about DS9, it felt better because it was the Federation and because I understood, like, all of the backstory for this kind of stuff.
Right.
Whereas Babylon 5 is a bigger hurdle to jump over just because it's entirely foreign to me.
I will say that some of there are some things that disappointed me about the final episode that it kept me from fully engaging with it.
What's
number
that?
One, the sad, sorry Cirque du Soleil fight choreography when racial tensions broke out between Centauri.
You didn't enjoy that sweet ass jump kick?
That
did
was,
you see that flying fucking roundhouse?
Yeah, that's like from the No, that wasn't
it was
a round.
Insane.
That was dance fighting. That went straight.
Right.
Yeah, no, that was West Side Story in space, and I thought that was like, just why are you trying to get fancy? Like nothing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Centauri were fucking ninja Russian ballet artists.
I think
and
only
kickboxing.
That one guy was.
Yeah, it's just like just throw some haymakers. These are civilians at a bar. They're not going to be trained warriors. Just have them start throwing haymakers.
Right.
Plus, didn't they establish the lizard people were super strong?
Did they?
Like when Jakar was like going on a berserk, he picked up that stone table. It looked like a stone table and smashed it as if it was made from foam.
Well, I mean, humans can apparently hold their own against Klingons under certain circumstances.
Right.
I mean, the Star Trek has its fair share of that bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. It's because the Klingons are all talk, no walk. That bothered me.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm seeing his orbital bombardment from these mass driver weapons, which look like they're just fucking hurling asteroids at which would be devastating.
Yeah.
And then they cut to this CNN in space saying hundreds of thousands have died. I'm like, why are you being stingy with the decimal places, man? This millions, hundreds of millions, billions.
So here's the
should
thing:
should be die. Like it felt like it really, in the same way to clone the Phantom Menace. Like they say Naboo's suffering, but I'm not seeing it. Like
I'm under the impression that space travel is a fairly new thing, like a couple hundred years.
Especially for the Narn. Like, they weren't spacefaring until they were conquered, and it's kind of like a...
Right.
You know, they, so, the Independence Day, they stole enough of their technology to
infect, fight back.
Infect then, mother, the Centurion mothership with the MacBook and
right,
et cetera, et cetera.
So at one point, like during this first attack on the Narn.
Yeah, Narnia.
When they have their colony wiped out, they said, I'm quoting Jakar here. Uh-huh. He says that there were a quarter million civilians on the colony that had been killed.
We're on a colony
that were
okay, sure.
That were a quarter million that were taken prisoner, right?
Sure.
He also says, and this is a quote, it is also their largest civilian colony.
Sure.
So their homeworld is a smaller civilian colony.
That's what I'm saying.
Than this outpost that was destroyed and only has a quarter million.
Or if you're
this race must only have like
a few million people
in it. So like,
and like even Babylon, this feels like that. Like Michael Straczynski thinks a quarter million is just beyond imagining because that's the complement of people in Babylon.
That's a
5.
Small city
it really
in
is.
The U.S.
I know,
like
I know.
A tiny ass city in the U.S.
Right.
You can get smaller, certainly.
If you
like
drop
3,000?
An asteroid on Indianapolis, you would kill way more than 250,000 people.
And in the millions.
It did make it seem small. And then when the guy calls Jakar and says, we have to, you know, surrender to avoid 100,000 more deaths, I'm like, what? This is your homeworld, man.
Yeah.
I thought,
apparently the homeworld is not their largest civilian colony either, so... That's odd to me.
No, I can't, because that's a...
He
when
says
I hear
that.
Colony,
I, mean,
I think
that's
Jamestown.
That's coming from...
Well, yeah, but the homeworld's not the colony.
Okay.
So
he just an outpost
sort of deal,
right?
Yeah, quarter million people on a fucking alien planet they've had to ship every... That makes perfect sense.
Okay.
Especially since they've only been doing this for less than 100 years. You haven't had the generational effect of... But right. Your homeworld? I mean, I get you suffered this... Maybe it's a mass extinction level, and you just haven't bounced back, but...
Well, it's the year 2245, something like that.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how humanity could possibly compete with the Centauri. I have no fucking clue
We were getting massacred.
Right. But, like, even in the modern day, like, now we're going to stand up to them and say, hey, this is, like, a bridge too far. Jakar's a refugee.
Yeah.
You're going to have to like fight us to the death, essentially, is the foot that they're putting down there.
It seems like humanity and Centauri are the biggest sticks in the galaxy that are known. That's what my feeling was. Like, the together
right.
that they could beat, the you know, easily Narn and Centauri, or the Centauri. The Minbari.
Sure.
Ugh, Minbari and Centauri.
Yeah.
The Minbari and Human Alliance. And that's the thing. Like, how are they that close of allies after just fighting a almost nearly extinction war? Why don't humanity know why they surrendered to us? Like, you think that'd be one of the terms of surrender. Why are you doing this? How is it a mystery?
Did they surrender? They didn't surrender
it's
to us. They just stopped attacking, right?
It says it said they mysteriously surrendered.
I think they said mysteriously withdrew.
I don't know.
Regardless, it
doesn't
seems
matter,
like
but I'm
the
very
power structure
curious.
Is strange here.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's no more strange than all of the races essentially being exact equals in Star Trek, right?
But that felt... Okay, you're right, but the real politic of, like, the fact that humans and Klingons were at war,
mm-hmm.
and then 30 to 60 years later, the Next Generation, you know, we saw, like, the last Star Trek film, The Undiscovered Country, was kind of like the beginning of their thaw of their Cold War.
Right. But why are the Romulans and the Vulcans and everything so parallel,
evenly matched,
yeah.
When
these races
saying.
Have been out there for God knows how long,
right.
Perfecting their technology, like the Borg. Why is the Borg the only true threat? Why are more of these friendly races
and
not
the Borg
super powerful?
Are badass. Why does Voyager able to elude them for
right
indefinitely? Essentially, Federation ship.
There's a lot of that going on.
Yeah. And that some of that's unavoidable in episodic science fiction, it seems.
Yeah. Because otherwise, they just have the floor mopped with them. And
can I ask you a question? Why doesn't somebody like an HBO or an AMC or Showtime, why don't they make like I'm going to do Babylon, a story like Babylon 5, and we're going to do it right. We're going to do 10 to 12 episodes a season, no fat, spare no budget. Like, why? It seems like fantasy has an easier time of it, and everybody's content to concede science fiction to Star Wars or Star Trek, which is fine. Uh-huh. They're fine sci-fi fantasies, but I want, like, really hardcore. I want a fucking Dune. Like, honestly, just make Dune. Just make Dune, HBO.
I think it's because those shows fail to capture the audience. Star Trek's really the only sci-fi series that's made it.
Because that's the thing about Dune is, like, you want incomprehensible alien teachings and philosophies. Yeah. Hundreds of pages of it, man.
Right. And I think that's what Battlestar Galactica reboot was kind of meant to be, was, you know, a competitor for Star Trek. And it just hasn't... I mean, I think it was really good. I know you don't like it. But still, in my, like, mind share, in my heart,
you wouldn't
it's
say
nowhere
that it's,
near Star Trek.
You wouldn't say, and also you wouldn't all say that it's equivalent to Game of Thrones on the fantasy scale. Like, what, like, Game of Thrones
I mean,
is to fantasy. No, I'm saying Game of Thrones is to fantasy the way X is to science fiction. That X is unanswerable. There is no direct equivalent, I don't think.
Right, but I also think Game of Thrones is the first of its type, too. Before that, you had fucking Xena Warrior Princess.
Well, Lord of the Rings kind of paved the way for it, I suppose.
But on TV?
Well, yeah.
Like, there wasn't anything that
But you've had the perennial success of Star Trek, and now you got Star Wars starting to get onto the small screen. I don't understand why we haven't had... I mean, maybe Westworld will be that, but Westworld's still not... It's science
not,
fiction, but
it's not spacefaring races going at each other.
Yeah, I want the depth and political machinations of a Deep Space Nine or a Babylon 5 or a Game of Thrones in space, only without... Like, you can do ridiculous stuff, but it better not be like, oh, I've just schlacked this guy's hair with spray, and it's are in a fan, and this guy's got a rubber strip glued to his... Like, I want real science fiction shit going on,
well,
man.
January 2017, Star Trek Discovery. Maybe,
it ain't going to be it.
Maybe, just maybe, it'll happen.
I'm just hoping it's good Star Trek.
Me too. We'll be covering it day one, so if you're interested in that, join us... for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was more impressed with Babylon 5 than I think I probably would have been had I watched it from the beginning, because I did watch a little bit of episode 1 of season 2 and kind of didn't really like it that much. I think season 1 would have been even more of a shit show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing, cuz you're
I think we got the best of the best plucked out of this, honestly.
The other thing I want to say about this is it's hard to talk shit about Babylon 5 when you realize what a mess the first two seasons of The Next Generation, even Deep Space Nine were.
The Next Generation is 1987. That's 7 years before this show even came on the air, man.
But still, like, I think the first season of Deep Space Nine was as big a mess as the first season of TNG.
I don't know. I don't think so.
I fairly recently watched the first season of TNG. It was about 5 years ago. I got Will Wheaton's whatever his tell-all biography.
It's a shit show.
It is a train wreck. Yeah. There's like 1.5 episodes that you might kind of squint and say, okay, Picard is righteous. Data is interesting. The effects are good for the time I'm in.
Right.
If you're a starved science fiction nerd. Yeah. But there was slim pickings. Even in season... Like, I don't think Star Trek really started taking off until season 3.
I think the art direction of the Federation itself, not of these alien worlds and the places they go in season 1, but the art direction of the Federation was there. And it was on.
That's because you're a Mac fanboy.
What do you mean?
All that
Leicar design.
All that Leicar shit is just iPads ahead of their time, man.
Right, totally.
You fly a ship with iPads.
Aside from a little bit of like the uniform stuff, they kind of grow into the uniforms later on. But I mean, the bridge looks fantastic.
The collar helped it look
a lot.
Not look like. Here's the thing, though. Like you
and
read
the different material helped.
You read
frankly.
A lot of You looked less like pajamas, more like a military uniform.
Yeah.
But you read a lot of contemporary reviews of The Next Generation, and a lot of people compared the bridge set to a hotel lobby.
They thought
it looked... I think you kind of just assume that that's a badass-looking bridge because you love Star Trek.
Maybe if you try to
look at it objectively, it does kind of... I don't know.
But it feels like it's set up really well. Like, it makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
Just the formation of it, and I don't know what the command room looks like here in Babylon right. 5. It doesn't seem like there is one.
Right. It seems everybody's like, got diplomatic offices or what. I'm sure there is.
And then there's a conference room.
I think I saw like when they were trying to get a hold of Sheridan in the shower before he's visited by that one dude, Glark, whatever his name was.
Right. I think the art direction in DS9 is even better.
Agreed.
Like way better than Star Trek Next Generation.
Even if you want to talk shit about the Enterprise D bridge, you got to give it up to Engine Room. The Engine Room is an iconic piece of science. That looks like a fucking starship reactor.
It does.
It sounds like it too.
It has the glow of the nacelles. It anchors you to what that room does.
I've never seen anyone talk shit about the Engine Room.
Right.
And you're right. Deep Space Nine looks cool because.
Because it's not a Federation outpost.
Star base has been taken over by the Federation.
And everybody from Sisko to O'Brien to Odo, everybody has these quarters that look harsh.
Yes.
They don't look like they have the amenities of a Federation.
No, they do not
outpost.
Look like the IKEA pods that the Next Generation guys are running around in.
Yeah, and it really brings you into that world. And I guess I don't quite feel the same way about Babylon 5 here. Like,
yeah,
the art direction is not quite as good, in my opinion.
Yeah. I felt like Brian sent us a ton of material, a lot of his background material, and I don't know how much of the stuff to actually read. He did like have this primer that if you want to sample these three episodes to see what we think about it, that I'll link in the show notes. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'll read a couple paragraphs from his initial email. Maybe I should have done this at the beginning. He said, Babylon 5 is my favorite TV show during my teenage years. It has been since surpassed by Breaking Bad. Well, that just shows you got, yeah. No, I mean,
wow.
I like Star Trek, but it's not even in my top 20 for television at this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
Yeah.
Sure.
When the last season of the show was picked up by TNT from the Warner Brothers Network, they showed daily reruns of the first four seasons. I still remember coming home from high school and watching these reruns religiously every day. I loved all things sci-fi like Star Wars and Star Trek, but Babylon 5 stories seemed to go deeper than others, with great character arcs unseen on network television at the time, and interesting allusions to historical events like World War II and McCarthyism, and also hitting on religious aspects that most other sci-fi shows wouldn't touch.
Really? Okay, we didn't get any of that in this episode, these three episodes.
No. I'm super interesting. He says, he concludes, I really hope you and others get a taste of why it's such a cult classic. I do. And in fact,
yeah,
I've added this to my list of things I want to watch.
The list you'll never plow through because new stuff's coming out all the time.
But it's like it was nowhere on my radar. Like now I got Buffy on there and all this stuff. But like, and I don't know if I'll finish it, but I kind of want to give it to at least the end of season three, because if I can see the promise of what he's saying. Like, I actually think you're underestimating. I think my suspicion is if I go through this entire series that I'm going to see that storytelling, if nothing else, is superior to Deep Space Nine and more consistent. If not, then I'll probably bail at season three. But
right. That's your suspicion. My suspicion is it's probably at best just as good because I think there was a lot of Dominion stuff. Deep Space Nine gets real good, I think.
Okay.
Toward the end. And actually, not even that far into it. Like, season three, it starts to really take off.
That's the thing. Like, season three seems like, they came out of the gates of season two swinging on Babylon 5. And that was my thought. I thought it was more like season four before the Dominion. But, like, if it took till season three to warm up, then there's a lot of the first two seasons.
They have
that are
the Defiant. Like, they make the Defiant.
Sure.
So, I mean, they're kind of knee-deep in it at the point that they make the Defiant.
But the Defiant wasn't manufactured for purposes of the Dominion War. It was manufactured to be like a cheap assault fighter against the Borg, essentially.
Right.
It was repurposed.
But the Dominion's on the scene. Like, they're already working. Like, you can already see the machinations with the Dominion and the Cardassians. Like, that shit's happening, like, right off the bat in Season 3.
Okay.
I don't know about Season 2. I didn't go back. I can't remember exactly the timeline.
Yeah. Apparently there's a shapeshifter on Babylon 5 too.
There is?
Yeah. Which like is again like, man, if I'm Michael Straczynski, I must be like just like steam rolling out of my ears as I watch these episodes. I guess they later made peace because Majel Barrett Roddenberry appeared as a guest star in like season 4 or 5. and it was kind of like burying the hatchet. We both have successful shows that are interesting in their own right, kind of acknowledgement of all that.
Right.
I don't know. It's the history. I also link the article on IO9 that Jason wrote because it's got a lot of fascinating behind the scenes details and whatnot. So yeah, I was intimidated by this project. I was afraid. I know we've kind of fallen behind. One of the reasons we're super busy, but one of the reasons for me was I also was intimidated by this project. Like, I think I might have pushed harder for us to, you know, get back, because I was afraid of the fact that we keep falling behind on these commissions. But it turns out I had nothing to fear. This was enjoyable. And in fact, I thought that the first episode was a good one to start with, because even though I think it's the weaker of it, it was a very light introduction to the universe.
Sure. Yeah.
But still gave me a good grounding in what I, because I also think that Brian, you did a great job of choosing three episodes that, as you say, you explain it though, like you wanted to shine a magnifying glass on Jakar and Londo, and
yeah, I
felt like
that.
I got everything I needed to enjoy the subtle aspects of their performance and, you know, all that stuff.
Right. Yeah. No, I enjoyed watching it. I don't know that I'm going to have time to go back and watch 100 episodes of a television show.
Is it 100? Oh, I guess it's
20
it, yeah.
plus per season.
Yeah.
Five
Jesus.
Seasons.
Jesus, that's the thing about the old. Now, the other
right.
thing that I think.
And it's an hour long show, so.
I think the other thing that Jason had that he sent me was a list of like the essential Babylon episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Because I bet like you could probably do the same thing in the Deep Space Nine if
they
you
have
wanted
them out
to.
There, yeah.
If you wanted to just like, okay, if you want to enjoy the Dominion War, watch these 30 episodes.
Right.
And skip the baseballs and the, you know, 1-2 buckle my shoe episodes.
Right. Oh, they have it subdivided by, yeah, like Dominion War and the
War
Founders.
For Romance.
Like the sure. If you only want to see episodes where O'Brien's frustrated. And
I just want to see episodes where Jake and the Ferengi and Nog get up to hijinks.
All right.
I just want to see the Jake and Nog episodes.
They've got that.
That's the highlights. But anyway, yeah, thanks,
Grand
Brian.
Grand Negus episode, sure.
Yeah, Grand Negus, always classic. Brian Strader, thank you for introducing us to, giving us a proper introduction to Babylon 5.
Yeah.
And having us give a second chance. There'll be lots of notes and stuff in the show notes if you want to take the plunge as well and forearm yourself. I don't think it's necessary. This is like bonus, and like it seems like you could really fall down a lore hole in this show, but I think these three episodes stand well on their own without any kind of introduction.
Yeah.
But also, I can't find them streaming for free anywhere. I had to get them on Amazon.
Yeah.
But they're 99 cents an episode. That's not so bad.
Cheap. They're SD. So.
They're SD. And also, the editing to make them widescreen was questionable in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
A lot of odd frame. Like, why did they do that? Why can't I have the choice? This is a streaming product. Why can't I choose what aspect ratio?
Right.
Like, the original, I'm sure, was 4:3, and now you're forcing to 16:9, which is cutting off people's foreheads and chins and shit and things. I want to see the full cobra head at all times. Don't hide that pointy chin from me.
Nope.
So there you go. If you want to commission your podcast like Brian, it's easy. Go to baldmove.com/shop. Click on the big film canister wheel. There's a variety of community commissions where you can chip in at 10 bucks at a time to make it happen. Or you can do what Brian did and pull down a personal project and make us watch whatever you care about, and we'll talk about it. We'll see you next time. I think the next one is Mulholland Drive.
Sure is.
So that will be interesting. I've never seen that. And I know you're not super excited about this filmmaker's list of work.
Nope. I think this is the Blue Velvet guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Okay. This next one might
be
interesting.
It's going to be a weird one.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it, though, because I kind of like that shit. But that's what we'll be back on the next time. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye-bye.